The Church of God the Eternal presents What is a Godly Work Ethic? This is the number 5 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
What is a godly work ethic? And I realize that it has covered or cut across a lot of specific areas. But when you understand what a real work ethic is, it doesn't involve just the routine going to work. It involves the philosophy by which you live. It involves many, many things that may not even be directly related to work. And that's why I wanted to give you this foundational premise, so that from that we'll be able to evaluate many of the specifics on down the road. We are going to evaluate them. We're going to spend quite a lot of time on it. Because just like this national educational thing that's going on right now, where they're indoctrinating our people, if you're not careful, you're going to come to the point you will absorb some of this stuff that's going on in the world. Because it's being thrown out on TV, on radio, in magazines. It's coming from every corner of available communication. You read, you see, you hear, you listen to your neighbors, and you're going to be subject to this kind of stuff if you're not careful. And when you are, it's going to make God appear to be very culpable. That's where you're going to run into problems. I would spare you, brethren. That's why I'm taking the time. Now, we can sit back in our own arrogance if we want to. And there will be some who will do it. But I haven't been around all these years and observed for naught. And what I have to say, I think, will be relatively important for you. And I hope you're not going to get caught in this garbage. Let me tell you, Satan is doing his level best to inundate us intellectually. Minds are being destroyed. They are absorbing rot at every turn of the road. And the basic philosophy of that rot is that which appeals to man's inordinate lust. Remember how many times he said within us, the lust that is within us is envious. We have innately within us a nature that if we're not careful, we begin to rationalize on the basis of our expectations, what seems right to us, what we want. It has nothing to do with honesty and integrity at all. And we'll begin to absorb on that basis. Brethren, I would spare you if you will just take it literally from the divine revelation of God, from the truth which he gave to us as a way of life. And so we have covered many, many components of this, but I want to get down to a last part of it, because if I didn't cover this part, many of us would think that God wanted us to work only, as though God never was concerned about whether, you know, we should stop and take a little breather here and there. I said some pretty strong things about retirement last time. Retirement is not of God. It never was. But does God believe in punishing us in driving work until we're 90 years of age? No. Not at all. But the healthy man, the man that is well off, is not the man who sits in a rocking chair, but who has less pressure, who uses his past expertise, who is counted on for his long years of experience. And it's right. He must feel needed and wanted. No, we are now taught the most culpable, damnable philosophy that could have ever been generated. That the newer it is, the better it is. We are getting better and better, which is nothing but the extension of the old concept of evolution. And so we believe every new concept that comes out of the hallowed halls of our institutions of higher learning has to be superior. Nonsense. And so out of those hallowed institutions has come the philosophy that once you're 45 or 55, you're useless. That's right, they're using the terms anymore. Wait till we get there. They're even trying to find out how to mercifully rid society of useless appendages. That is, you have performed your useful period of time, and now let's get rid of you. Oh, but they're working on it. What do you mean? Our oldsters are useless creatures. They're useless creatures only in a society that is in reverse. And the sooner both come to understand their positions in life, the better off they're going to be. The young must come to understand they can learn from old people, but they don't want to. In their hard-hearted obstinacy and their defiant, rebellious spirit that comes directly from Satan the devil. And the old people have been made to believe that they are useless because they haven't kept up. Well, there are answers for these things, and when I get into the specifics, I want to cover them. But now we have come down to the time, and I want to cover the specific aspect of rest. Well, God knew that we needed rest, but you know, man never wants to do it like God wants it done. He's figured out for himself. He wants four-day weekends. He wants all these so-called holidays, but he doesn't believe in holy days. He thinks he has to have rest. And indeed he does. He doesn't need a Sabbath. So we employ the Kelly system, which means you take whatever day you're allotted, whenever it rolls around. Rest is essential. And when I get down to the specifics of it, I'm only covering it in general right now. When I get down to the specifics, I'm going to quote some specifics. And we'll substantiate it. So rest was essential. It's necessary for the land. Well, if it's necessary for the land out of which we came, it surely must be necessary for you too. For you came out of that very land. The soil, as I've so many times said, from whence you came. That's the reason that God said, you know, the land had to have a land Sabbath. And that's the reason God said, as a matter of an appointment, that the land is ultimately going to receive her just rest. There is an appointed time when God said it's going to get it. It's coming. But man needed rest too. Once a week. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. And it's called the rest of the Sabbath. We haven't defined that rest yet. We're going to later on. But there's also a reason for holy days. So obviously God did not feel that simply one day a week, 365, that is 52 weeks rather, a year, was sufficient. Not at all. So he added holy days. And those holy days give us a time from the restless anxieties and frustration of our physical responsibilities to reflect upon things which are spiritual, to think about them. And to think spiritually, indeed, is a rest. So there is a reason for holy days. Exodus, the 13th chapter. Exodus 33, and let's note verse 14. 33, and noting verse 14, it says, And he said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give you rest. When was the presence of God made available? See, that's what happened on the Sabbath, and that's what happens on all the holy days. I'm not going to take time to read all the textual material. I'm just going to make the statements. If I read all the texts, that would be the total subject. But God appeared on those occasions. His presence was there. And within the presence of God is a kind of rest that God wants us to experience. A rest that you cannot have separated from God. Merely taking off one day out of seven is not going to give you the rest that you need. It may give you a physical dimension, but that's woefully inadequate. When we get down to the specifics of this subject, that's when I'll really cover it. So he said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. So it's a promissory consideration. Now, I want you to notice Leviticus 23. Leviticus, the 23rd chapter. And let's note verses 4, 7, 8, 21. And, I'll give them to you as we go along. Leviticus 23, noting verse 4. These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. Now he said, here are annual occasions occurring within seasons that I want you to proclaim at their appointed times. Verse 7. In the first day you shall have an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. Servile, meaning a tangible physical labor. You shall do no physical work on those occasions. There's one of them. Let's notice now verse 8. But you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. In the seventh day is an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. So there is another day. You shall do no servile work therein. Now note verse 21. And you shall proclaim on the selfsame day, that means Pentecost, that it may be an holy convocation unto you. That means a gathering together under the auspices of Jesus Christ. The word convocation means a congregation. It's oftentimes so translated. May be an holy convocation unto you. You shall do no servile work therein. It shall be a statute forever in your dwellings throughout your generations. So there's another occasion. No servile work is to be done on that day. In verse 25, you shall do no servile work therein. Here now is the first of the seventh month, which is the Feast of Trumpets. You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. So we find another day in which no servile work is to be done. Then verse 28, and we're speaking here now of atonement. And you shall do no work in that same day, for it is a day of atonement. Did you notice something there? He changed, and he didn't use the word servile. In this case, you shall do no work. And it is obvious that there is a difference. The other one involves preparation for a feast. But no manual labor for gain. Quite a difference. All right. Next, I want you to notice verse 35. On the first day, we're talking now about the Feast of Tabernacles. On the first day shall be an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. There it is once again. Well, now Moses just made a mistake, didn't he? He got caught up in it, and when he got down to the matter of atonement, he forgot to use the word servile. Or is there a difference? Oh, yes. Verse 36. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. That's the Feast of Tabernacles. Now here's the great high day. On the eighth day shall be an holy convocation unto you, and you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. It is a solemn assembly, and you shall do no servile work therein. The only one where the word servile is omitted is atonement. Amazing, isn't it? No servile work. No manual labor. No mental labor for gain. It is a time of reprieve. All right? Let's notice what the source, the real source of rest is. We just read it back here, but I want to repeat it. Exodus 33 and verse 14. Exodus 33 and note verse 14. It is not an automatic thing. Rest is a gift. There are people, myriads of people, that have not worked for gain on Saturday, but they have not kept it either. Not at all. You cannot be the recipient of a promise of God except it is a gift from God. 33 and 14 of Exodus, and he said, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. Rest comes with the presence of God as a gift from him. That marvelous feeling. Have you ever noticed it, brethren? When that sun begins to set on Friday evening, there is a kind of peace that prevails. And I've thought so many times, it must be just, you know, because I'm conditioned. But I know better. There's a kind of peace that comes and settles over the entire world at that time that you could not have otherwise. And yet I'm sure others do not experience it. They don't have it. But ask yourselves, when that day comes, when God says, my presence will be with you, do you feel it? Do you experience it? Is it something that is awesome in its emotional impact and influence upon you mentally and physically? It comes from God. That rest comes from God. It isn't any wonder. This world does not have peace. They don't have rest. I don't care whether they do not work or not. They do not experience that peace and that rest. You can't have it. It is a gift that is going to come from God. They may have the physical benefits of it. It may not labor the body, but they are not going to really reap the real benefits until they have the presence of God. And that is on appointed times and with appointed people. Now, rest from what? Physical rest, we know. You know, you don't work. So therefore, you're not straining the muscles or the minds. But there must be a lot more to it because it is a gift of God. And it cannot be kept except by those whom God has called and to whom it is given. So the mere cessation of labor is not the fulfillment, not the total keeping of that responsibility. First, it is a rest from anxieties and daily fears. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 12 and verse 10. Deuteronomy 12, noting verse 10. But when you go over Jordan, remember this was the promise, and it goes right back to what he gave in Exodus 33 and verse 14. But when you go over Jordan, or let's say the form of our baptism, our passing through the Red Sea, into our promised, receipt of the presence of God. Not quite the inheritance, only the down payment at the present time. But when you go over Jordan and dwell in the land which the Lord your God giveth you to inherit, and when he giveth you rest from all your enemies around about you, so that you dwell in safety. Now there is a real conception of rest. How many of us live troubled and frustrated lives, worrying anxiously about our possessions, about our safety, about protection, about health? Are we? That's a part of what's contained in the real keeping of God's holy days and Sabbaths. We rest. We're not mentally frustrated, worrying, anxious, troubled, perplexed, abused. In Matthew 11, Matthew the 11th chapter, verses 28 through 30, many, many people, as I've said, do not do physical work on the Sabbath, nor on occasion a holy day of God. Yet they are not keeping those days. Then how do you keep them in their true significance? When you can turn loose of mental doubts, frustrations, fears, apprehensions, misgivings, and live confidently in God. With trust. What did he say here in Matthew 11 and beginning in verse 28? Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden. That's our routine responsibility, isn't it? And I will give you rest. Isn't that what he promised also in Exodus 33 and verse 14? And I will give you rest. It isn't merely a cessation from labor. It is a spiritual dimension. When we no longer second-guess God, we are not mentally berated or abused. We are not apprehensive and fearful or troubled. Our lives are lived in conformity with the truth of God, and our minds are in harmony with the mind of Christ. Then we can have peace. We can have health. We can have happiness. We can have rest. Take my yoke. The yoke of spiritual responsibility, not the yoke of servitude in this life upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. We're not berated by the demands of the flesh, the lusts of the flesh. We are not driven by demands of our own makeup that can never be satisfied or fulfilled. The eyes that have never seen enough, the ego that has never been pumped high enough, the greed that has never been satisfied, the lusts of our carnality. Learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. Those are the ones that are going to find it. No one else. Secondly, rest means rest from the abuse of wrongs and uncertainties. Our pasts can be buried. We can live confidently, futuristically. Psalms 38. Psalms 38, and let's begin in verse 1. O Lord, rebuke me not in thy wrath, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. For thine arrows have stick fast in me, and thy hand presses me sore. Sometimes we go through it, don't we? And if we're smart, if we use the intelligence that God gave to us, we're not going to be finger-pointing at somebody else. We're going to recognize that the problem is ours. No one else causes it. For even in the midst of chaos, confusion, and bewilderment, God has promised us rest. You cannot look to somebody else. For thine arrow stick fast in me, David knew and understood, and thy hand oppresses me sore. There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger. David recognized that his illness and his problems were coming because of what God was permitting or allowing, in which men sometimes presume to alter or change. There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger, neither is there any rest in my bones because of my sin. He recognized his problems and the causative factors. For mine iniquities are gone over mine head. He realized he was a drowning individual. As an heavy burden, they are too heavy for me. Remember Matthew 11? Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. My wounds stink and are corrupt because of my foolishness. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long. And sometimes we do. We use, of course, more poignant language for our day. We call it complaining. We go about complaining day in and day out. For my loins are filled with a loathsome disease, and there is no soundness in my flesh. I am feeble and sore broken. I have roared by reason of the disquietness of my heart. See what unresolved sins will cause. When we can lay our lives out, open and naked and bare before God, we can be forgiven. And the past can be obliterated. And we can turn around 180 degrees and look forward in confidence and in faith. And I will give you rest. Rest can come when we have asked God to forgive us, when our sins have been obliterated, when our wrongs have been atoned, when we are right with God. Are we troubled? Are we frustrated? Are we bewildered? Are we confused? Are we doubtful or apprehensive? Maybe we'd better take it up with God and get it all resolved. And then in humility, self-effacement, give proper direction to our lives. Thirdly, does the future bother us? Are we awestruck with the potential of tomorrow? Nuclear furor. The unknown plague, the mysterious? Are they all frightening to us? Psalms 37 and verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Don't let the day dictate the terms. Take hold of the assurance of tomorrow and know. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Don't let the circumstances of the day destroy you. Don't live clouded, confused, muddled, bewildered lives. In faith and in confidence, live that confidence. Certitude. Fret not thyself because of him who prospers in his way. Don't look to others who ostensibly are making great marks in life. Their days are numbered. Fret not thyself because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked devices to pass. Let's not worry about those things. Fix your eyes upon God and on tomorrow. And let God take care of his own charge. He doesn't need your help. Hebrews 4 and verse 3. Hebrews, the fourth chapter, and let's note verse 3. For we which have believed do enter into rest. Who? We which have believed do enter into rest, as he said. It is the beginning of our promised inheritance, which not only encompasses the entire world, typified by Canaan, the land of Palestine, but in its more awesome terms, represents quietude of mind and of heart. Confidence, surety. Every marvelous thing that men have wanted. Men today live harrowed lives, troubled, perplexed by a myriad circumstances. But it's because they have not fixed their attention upon Christ and upon God. And because that way has not become superlative in their lives. And they're still looking to the physical things by which their lives are encumbered, as though what happens here today is the important thing. Not at all. For we which have believed do enter into rest. Are we really experiencing that rest? Because we believe. As he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. We can have it. And that rest reflects our hope of tomorrow. Those who are called, who know who they are, and who believe under the saving of their own souls. They have that confidence. They have that assurance. They're not always badgering. They're not always heretical. They rest in confidence, surety, faith, trust. Fourthly, false objectives are notoriously unsettling. False objectives, give us a myriad problems. Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter. And verses 4 through 6. Ecclesiastes 4, and beginning in verse 4, again, I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Now let's go back and get it in context. I considered all travail. Travail, an old English word, simply means work. I considered all work and every right work, that for all this a man is envied of his neighbor. Whatever he does, whatever he goes out to perform, somebody is going to be envious of him. A man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity. Do you want all your mental power to be ascribed to that trash heap of vanity? Then don't frustrate yourself with anyone else. And yet I know of no human being that doesn't do it. We're constantly worrying about what somebody else gets, does, receives, happens, or is doing. As though what happens to them reflects directly upon our hope, our expectation, our rest. The fool foldeth his hands together, and eats his own flesh, which doesn't mean literally at all. It just simply means that he wastes away because he is not an enterprising individual. He folds his hands, oh, woe is me, what am I going to do? Rather than to seize the myriad opportunities that are available. No one needs to go without labor. There are a million things to do. And sometimes we may not derive the maximum benefit out of it, but why not leave that up to God? But there is always plenty to do. Not like the individual who says, work has never bothered me. I can lie down right beside it and sleep. And we all quote that every once in a while and jest about it. Jest in its own right is not wrong, but do we live it? That is wrong. There's always plenty to do. People to serve, people to help out. Sometimes we don't want to do those things. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is an handful with quietness. God says that sometimes just to live through these times with quietness, with firm resolve and confidence is a whole lot better than consistent mental frustration. Better is an handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Now, do we really believe it? Or is our mark of achievement today what we accumulate and what we gather at the present time? Or would we rather be concerned with tomorrow? False objectives are going to create a lot of misgiving and doubt. And fifthly, understanding our time and purpose. Rest by understanding. In Ecclesiastes 9, verses 7 through 10. Ecclesiastes 9, and beginning in verse 7. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy. Now don't worry about the fact that you don't have any for the next meal. Sufficient unto that very meal is your concern. have something to eat, be thankful. With joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart. If you have any to drink. But be satisfied with the immediate. That's what God said. For God now accepts thy works. For God now accepts thy works. Let thy garments be always white, even if they're black or green or gray or red. He's talking about quality involved in character. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Grace and dignity, despite circumstances. Live joyfully with a wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. All the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in this life, and in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. Whatsoever thy hand finds to do, do it with thy might. We have just seen that there's no dearth of work. There's much that can be done. It all depends on whether we have the resolve to do it. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. There's none there. Then God gave to us, as living human beings, the blessing of work. The blessing of work. I didn't say overwork. Some are very foolish at overwork. Some are even more foolish and don't work at all. It's balance. And using the vitality and strength that God gave to us wisely and judiciously. And using it effectively. Who is now, brethren, the happy man? The happy family? The one who is listening to the still subtle voice of Satan, who deceived man from the very beginning and to this very day has been acting on his philosophy, setting things up his own way. Or the man who realizes that the only source of real happiness is obedience to God. And then peace, tranquility, prevail. Real rest. Who is the happy man? Notice, the obedient. Here in Deuteronomy 14, let me quickly read these few texts and then I want to bring this to a conclusion. Deuteronomy 14, verses 23 through 26. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of thy corn, of thy wine, of thine oil, the firstlings of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul desires. For oxen, for sheep, for wine, for strong drink, or for whatsoever your soul desires. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God. Remember Exodus 33 and verse 14? And thou shalt rejoice. How do you rejoice if you're clouded? You're living apprehensively, fearfully. If you're worrying, if you're anxious and concerned, you can't. If you are living traumatic and troubled lives in relationship to others, you can't be joyous. If you're not satisfied with self, and who can be that has not done his own work and labored? Then you cannot rejoice unless it is a gift from God, and that gift from God comes as a result of living that way of life to which you have been called. Unions are not going to give it to you. The government is not going to give it to you. Your confidence is not in unions, and it isn't in governments, and it isn't in your employer. They can't give it to you. God can. And then as God has blessed you, you go to these appointed places and you live joyfully. There you manifest by your lives that confidence, that assurance, that faith, that conviction, that rest that God has promised. In Deuteronomy 16 and verse 15, 7 days shalt thou keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose, because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase, the promise of God, and in all the works of thine hands. Therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. Rest that God has promised as a result of the knowledge of his days. Obedience to him comes when we have fulfilled his purpose. We have accepted wisely and judiciously the responsibilities that God has given to us, and we look to God to sustain us. No one else is going to have that confidence, I'll guarantee you. And there are millions of people right out there right now that can tell you that. Companies cannot provide it. Romans 2 and verse 10. Romans 2 and verse 10. But glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile. What is the good work of God? Spiritually, obedience, of course, to his laws, his statutes, and judgments. But it goes way beyond that. It involves our responsibilities in life, our work, our attitude toward work, the charge that God gave to us in the care of this earth, and that we don't hear it today and forget it tomorrow. I'm giving you many principles that are unrelenting principles. Where we live, our lives, our possessions, all that we are must reflect that way. And there is satisfaction in it. No other way. Satisfaction comes in having fulfilled it, when you can then rest, confidently knowing that you have carried out the responsibility that God gave to you. Psalms 146. Psalms 146, verses 5 and 6. Happy is he that hath the God of Jacob for his help, whose hope is in the Lord his God, which made heaven and earth, and then gave us a charge dress it, and keep it. Work despite the circumstances by the sweat of our faces, which made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that therein is, which keepeth truth forever. Meaning that that way will never change. You can have confidence in it. And then, secondly, who is the happy man? Those who endure. James 5:11. We know now why there is adversity and trial, difficulty, anxiety, and frustration in physical life today. We know why these things exist, yet they have no effect upon us if we are the called of God and if we have faith and confidence in Him. We know, and we know that we know. This life is now fraught with difficulty. It is a curse that befell all mankind because they would not accept a more simple way. As a curse, these difficulties befell us. We are now paying the price, but God has not lessened the responsibility nor the end result. Despite all the adversity and the curse that has befallen man, God still requires us to perform exactly what He did before. But this time now, it must be performed in the midst of adversity, difficult trauma, and unique experience. So James 5 and verse 11 says, James 5 and noting verse 11, behold, we count them happy which endure. We count them happy who endure. Endure what? The curses that befell man because he didn't believe God. And he listened to the still subtle voice of Satan and is still doing it today. And my dear brethren, if we listen to that voice, we're not only going to pay the immediate present price, we're also going to pay the future one. Be careful. It could be terrible. But some, unfortunately, do not understand. Malachi 3. Malachi, the third chapter. And let's begin in verse 13. Your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord, yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? You have said it is vain to serve God. And how many people say exactly that? And what profit is it that we have kept His ordinance? Because they didn't get what they thought they ought to, because they were listening to a wrong voice. And what profit is it that we have kept His ordinance? And that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts. And now we call the proud happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Isn't that exactly what human beings do? They think the man that lives upon the hill is the happy one, because they've been fed a line. Yea, they that tempt God are even delivered. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before Him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon His name, those who understood. And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels. Guess who's going to make it? And I will spare them as a man spares his own son that serves him. And guess who's going to pay the price? Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. Can we discern today? Are our senses sharpened? Do we know the difference? Can we tell the one that is serving God versus the one who has listened to the tragic voice of Satan? In summary now, very quickly, and I have about 1 minute to do it, remember, I want you to get it in context, so I'm going to give it to you rapidly. God created man. and he created him with purpose. And by virtue of that creation, man is the son of God, and as the son of God, owes his allegiance to that father. As a father, then, God set a perfect work example for us. 6 days, his work is perfect, and he was satisfied in it. He took great pride in it, and he consistently performs it because he is still working to this day. Man's purpose, God gave to him a created earth. He said, I want you to take care of it, prune it, and to keep it. It's a duty, it's a responsibility incumbent upon us. But why, brethren, as we look about us, do we see such chaos, devastation, a lack of order and beauty? Because man listened to bad advice, which he's still doing to a broad extent. He rejected God. He didn't want God, nor his purpose. The results? The curses that we see men acting and living under today. Yet, despite all these curses, we are still accountable to God for the original charge to dress this earth and to take care of and to keep it, to take care of our own families, to perform the duties that God has given to us, now fulfilled through suffering, pain, and curses. Next, the righteous will see. They'll understand. They understand and accept. 9, those who understand will give proper direction to their work as an act of service. They understand. And those who do not understand or are rebelling will turn to exploitation. They think the only way to get ahead is to take advantage of somebody else. Retirement basically is not of God. Change of service is. Activity is a blessing, not a curse. Rest is a command of God, characterized in the Sabbath and the holy days, the 7th year as well as the 50th year as a jubilee. But who is the happy man? The one who is called and who is obedient. Even in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, we today, even if our brothers and sisters of the common faith have turned, have the privilege of living the ways of God to the best of our ability, physically and circumstantially. The charge is ours. Let's live up to it.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is a Godly Work Ethic? This was the number 5 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.